You know that first poem, that church where we were all having so much fun? Well, there was a guy who used to go to Sunday school with us there, and his name was George. And George was a kid, one of those kids that was overweight, you know, and he didn't have very good coordination, and he couldn't play ball with the rest of the guys. And he lived with and he wasn't very bright. And he lived with his mother and grandmother, and I don't know what had happened to George's father, whether he was dead or just gone. And they, the two women, the grandmother and mother, bought him trombone lessons. And no way was poor George ever going to play the trombone. I mean, he practiced for about a year, and he could play about as well as anybody in this crowd could play after 3 weeks, you know. Poor George, you know, there was just no way he was going to play the trombone. Well, we used to go over and see George, and on the way we would pass a house where a woman lived who was a hermit, and her name, I believe, was Jensen. I called George the family Grubskis in this poem, but that wasn't their name. Anyway, this woman, a Jensen woman, lived alone in this house, and she never came out of the house. And I don't know how she got food or anything. Nobody ever saw her out, but she would just peer out the window, kind of frightened of the world, I guess. And we would go by and wave at her, and we'd go on up to George's. Well, George lived in this strange house where the front door was behind the stairs. I don't know if you can picture that, but the front stairs didn't go to the front door. They went up to the second story, right over the front door. Very odd looking place. And at one time, the entire family was afflicted with a condition that was identified as St. Vitus dance. And I don't know if you know what that is, but that's a dreadful condition where people flutter and shake. And anyway, I guess it wasn't that, because somebody told me that's incurable, and George recovered and his mother recovered, but the old lady never recovered, and she just went out shaking. And we would go in the house, and George and his mother would be in the front room, and the mother would be kind of piously smiling at the little boys who'd come to see George. And the old woman would come in with her hands shaking like this. And George's mother would say to the old woman, she'd say, "Oh, mother," she'd say, "why don't you entertain us all by sitting down and playing for us one of your original compositions?" And if you can believe it, that's just exactly what would happen, is this old woman with these shaking hands would sit down at the piano and play some terrible tune that she'd composed herself, see? Well, I don't know, a lot of you, when I say this, I think maybe you'll remember this. Whatever you remember about childhood, I'll tell you something that you may not remember about it, but was true. You had one thing, and it was sad that you ever lost it. Sad for me, too. You had a marvelous sense of the absurdity of things. Do you remember that? I mean, how easy it was to laugh. And, you know, and think if we'd have kept that, how improved our politics would be, for example. you know? Well, anyway, you can imagine. Here's this scene. This quaking old lady is, say, they're playing this awful music. The pious mother is standing there nodding approval, and dumb George, you know. And, of course, we're trying very hard not to laugh, you see. I mean, you know, and we're just holding it in and looking around at each other, and we can't wait to get outside, and we would burst into laughter, you know, rolling on the ground, exploding with laughter. Well, I hadn't thought of these people for years and years, but after, when I was in this hot writing period, after I quit the boozing, one day they were there. They just came back, and I got to thinking about them, and I thought, yeah, that was funny. God, that was funny back then. When I tell it, you know, it still seems funny, but I'm older now, and I know that, sure, it was funny, but there was something very, very sad happening there, you know. And I got to thinking about how I'd loused up my life this way and that way, and I thought, well, you know, I'm overweight, I'm very fat, and I don't have my coordination anymore, and I can't play ball with the boys, and I never could play a musical instrument, and when I drank all those years, my hands used to shake in front of audiences when I read, and what the hell am I doing? I'm a playing for you one of my original compositions, see. And it occurred to me that that maybe somewhere along the line that life reduces us all to a kind of amateur status, and that maybe it isn't, I think maybe President Carter was right when he said it's wrong to think that you're better than other people. And it seemed to me that, am I so that much different than George looking back? I don't think so. And I mean, you can think you are if you want, but, you know, I'd rather you not come to my house for dinner. And anyway, I got this poem. It's called What Thou Lovest Well Remains American. You remember the name was Jensen. She seemed old, always alone inside, face pasted gray to the window, and mail never came. Two blocks down, the Grubskis went insane. George played rotten trombone, Easter when they flew the flag. Wild roses remind you the roads were gravel and vacant lots the rule. Poverty was real, wallet and spirit, and each day slowest church. You remember threadbare church groups on the corner howling their faith at stars, and the violent holy rollers rending that barn for their annual violent sing, and the barn burned down when you came back from war. Knowing the people you knew then are dead, you try to believe these roads paved are improved. The neighbors moved in while you were away, good-looking, their dogs well-fed. You still have need to remember lots empty and fern. Well-trimmed lawns remind you of the train your wife took one day forever, some far empty town, the odd name you never recall, the time 6:23, the day October 9, the year remains a blur. You blame this neighborhood for your failure. In some vague way, the Grubskis degraded you beyond repair, and you know you must play again and again. Mrs. Jensen, pale at her window, must hear the foul music over the good slide of traffic. You love them well, and they remain still with nothing to do, no money and no will. Love them, and the gray that was their disease you carry for extra food in case you're stranded in some odd empty town and need hungry lovers for friends, and need feel you are welcome in the secret club they have formed.